Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Three Questions. I am the host of The Three Questions, Andy Richter. And this week, I am talking to comedian, actor, and podcaster Bobby Lee. You know him from Mad TV, Harold and Kumar, Reservation Dogs, his stand-up comedy, and his hit podcast, Bad Friends and Tiger Belly, which I was a guest on, and I had a riot. His new movie, Sweet Dreams with Johnny Knoxville, is out now. Here is my really wild and woolly conversation with the totally nuts Bobby Lee. Can't you tell my love? Now, wait, did I hear you wondering what we're going to be talking about on this podcast?
Well, here's the thing, Andy Richter. I don't watch anybody's podcast.
Yeah, so I don't either.
I don't know what the format's going to be. I don't know.
Well, this one, it's called The Three Questions, and it's the three questions are, and I don't ask them explicitly.
What do you mean explicitly?
I mean, I don't go like, so where are you from?
Can you do it telepathically?
No, I mean, this is just what will guide the conversation. Where do you come from? Where are you going? And what have you learned?
Oh, no.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yep. See, but I don't blame you for not knowing, because I was on your Tiger Blood podcast.
I
thought we were going to, it was all Charlie Sheen trivia.
Yeah, it wasn't.
I tricked you so much. It was just fun talks with you and your ex-girlfriend. What the fuck is that about?
What do you mean?
Why do you have an ex-girlfriend now?
We started it together. It's like, so the Pixies.
Right.
What are they?
You mean like White Stripes? Like, is that what you're kind of saying?
Yeah, the views. Yeah, not the mythological thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean the Pixies, the band, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Kim Deal.
Right.
Right. Is the Pixies better with Kim Deal not in it? I don't think so.
But did Frank Black date Kim Deal at some point?
No.
Like, I don't understand.
I don't know.
I'm talking about the personal, pre-existing personal relationship.
What I'm saying is the Tiger Belly, not blood.
Oh, Tiger, whatever.
God, it's aggressive.
You didn't know what this podcast
was
about.
It's two questions
either.
With Andy Richter, man.
Of course I know. Who the fuck are you? That's the first one. No.
So I don't know if Frank Black and Kim Deal had a sexual, probably not.
Right.
But I'm just saying, I don't think the Pixies are as strong without Kim Deal. So it's like Kalila, I started the podcast / band with.
You're right.
Honestly, in relationships, I don't have weirdness after they die, the relationship.
After the person dies.
No.
I keep them around. I have a lot of exes around my house.
What I mean is that I don't have any resentment, or I miss them and I want to see them again. So I have no problems working with her.
That's nice. No, that's actually really grown up and healthy. I was kind of just teasing you.
I know. Thank you for that.
For either one of you, does it sort of then kind of make you go, oh, well, maybe we should give another try?
No. I'm okay with it. But, you know, in fact, all my relationships I'm still in contact with.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, Sarah Hyland, not the one from Modern Family, another one.
Uh-huh.
And then I have, like, I saw Christine, my girlfriend, with her husband and her baby at the airport a couple of months ago. That was nice. So I have no problems with it.
That's good.
So where did I come from? Is that the first
question? Yeah, I know you came from San Diego.
And how do you know that?
Because I have this whole sheet.
You Googled it.
It's mostly Wikipedia. Mm. It's not, I mean, come on, it's a podcast. We don't work.
I was born. I was born at Sharp's Hospital in San Diego, 1971.
Nice.
In September 17th.
Right.
And I was born, and it was a golden egg. And then what popped out is a panda.
You're really...
and he climbed up on top of a rice mound. There's mountains of rice in Korea.
Right, right. And in San Diego.
And in San Diego, by proxy. And he queefed.
Nice.
The panda.
Yep.
And a bubble came out.
Right. Pink bubble.
A pink bubble. Yeah. And inside there was a maggot.
I've seen YouTube shows.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Because the pink is the blood.
Right.
So
sure.
A bloody, you know, queef bubble.
Sure.
You know, and there's a little maggot in there surviving off the nutrients.
Right.
And then that's me.
That's you?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's me.
Well, how long did it take you to turn into a real boy?
14 years.
Wow.
14 years.
That's,
yeah.
You know, congratulations to your parents. That, they really stuck it out.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't know if I would have 14 years of raising a maggot in me.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Just hoping that it turns into a boy.
Yeah, yeah. Turned into a boy.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah.
But anyway, I lied just now. I was born regular.
I know.
Okay.
I know.
Yeah.
I know you like to make things more interesting.
I do.
I think everyone appreciates that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is unfiltered water?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is, actually.
Okay.
We have, but, you know, it comes out of the sink, but it's like a special, its own little water tap.
Oh, I can't drink it then.
That's filtered. Really?
It's Aaron Brockovich water. I was complaining to them earlier. Is this Aaron Brockovich water?
What does that mean?
Do you ever see the movie Aaron Brockovich?
No, but it goes through a filter that's under the sink, like a specialized filter gets changed.
Well, then I can drink it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's not like straight out of the tap.
Yeah, it just tastes funny.
Oh.
Anyway. Anyway. It's, yeah. You know, but so I was born in San Diego, and then
your folks are Korean. That's fairly clear, right?
How is that clear?
Because you said already.
Well, I didn't say it.
Yeah, you did.
I said I was Korean.
Right.
How is that clear for my face?
No, because you said you're Korean. It's like if I said,
I don't remember saying it, but I guess from your mouth to God's ears.
Yeah, you did say Korean.
Okay.
And also,
so yes, I am.
No, but I mean, there's also you've mentioned it in public before that you're Korean.
Yes.
It's not like,
it's common knowledge.
He finally comes out on the three questions.
Yeah.
Bobby Lee admits.
Yeah, I'm Korean.
Yeah. And how long had your folks been in?
Were they Korean? How long were they Korean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, how long had they been in San Diego?
Well, my parents met way before that in L.A.
Yeah.
And they met through other family members. So they didn't come here as a couple from Korea.
Right.
And, you know, my mom hated my dad. He stalked her, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And then she wear her down?
He wore her down. And then she moved to Wisconsin and he followed her there.
Wow.
Yeah. And he wooed her with a meat.
With meat.
Like a steak.
Right.
As like little tiny.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, but with like, you know, a steak. And she's like, oh, well, he can provide. And so then I guess they had sexual relations and then they had me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then.
Now, were you conceived in Wisconsin?
I don't know. No, San Diego.
San Diego.
Yeah, they moved back to San Diego. They had a wig store.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, when I was born, we lived in the wig store. And so I lived in my cradle, because there's still a cradle there.
In the wig store?
Oh, yeah.
Is it still your parents' wig store?
No, they sold it to my uncle.
Uh-huh.
And then, so maybe 10 years ago, they sold it. So 10 years ago, before they sold it, my uncle, I went up there.
Uh-huh.
There's a storage room where all the mannequin heads are, where the broken ones.
Right.
Right? And so it's all these shelves with mannequin heads. And in the middle of this room is a cradle.
Wow.
And so I guess when I was a baby, I looked up and all these mannequin heads were like looking down on me.
Right, right.
Yeah, but I don't think it was petrifying. You don't know what it is.
Right, no.
You just think it's like, you know, oh, I mean, like, you know, those Star Wars senators from the movie Star Wars?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? From the Clone Wars.
You had a galactic council.
Yeah, so it looked like a galactic council looking down on me. You know what I mean?
Judging you.
Yeah. Or I felt like maybe I was special.
Right.
Like I'm anointed or something.
Right.
You know, I'm the chosen one.
But it was also a good practice because I imagine they were all white.
You're right.
Yep.
You're absolutely right. In the 70s, they didn't have looked at and judged by a bunch of white faces. Which makes me kind of mad that there was only one type of mannequin head in the 70s, right? There should have just been one like this. Just one. Anyway, I can do that, guys. Anyway, yeah. But, and then, let's get real for a second. You want to get real for a second?
Sure.
But it was a very dark childhood, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
How come? I mean, I want to know.
Do you really?
I do.
Yeah, my dad was drinky-drink.
Oh.
He drinky-drink a lot, and then he abuse.
Oh.
Yeah. Hit.
Are you an only child?
No, I had a brother, Steve.
You have an older brother, yeah.
Yes, I just remember as a kid, like, constantly, like, just being aware that he was home.
And scared.
Yeah, and scared, and also just kind of, like, you know, figuring out if it's, like, because there was different personalities he had.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was, like, nice, you know what I mean? Yeah, so it's, like, you look around the corner, I go, oh. But something, he'll shift real quick. So, like, hello. He go, hello. Right? Hey, Dad. I don't like you. You know what I mean? And like, you'll switch fast. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then when you're a kid, you're constantly like, and all the screaming and the abrupt, like, you know, rage kind of like, it's very traumatic.
Yeah, no, it's awful. And it's, no, and it happens.
Laugh.
No, it's, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, laugh about it.
That's a common reaction to it. And I mean, and I had moments with a stepfather who had an alcohol problem.
Wow.
But it wasn't like all the way through, you know, like all the way through my childhood.
Oh.
You know, it was just like it got bad for a number of years. But I totally can relate to that.
Did it ever shift into a lighter thing or not?
Well, he and my mom split up.
Oh, I see. That's good.
He wasn't naturally abusive person, and he's the father of my half brother and sister. And he wasn't he had a business that was going bad, and he was an alcoholic. Mm. You know, he was drinking all the time. But I did, like, when he moved out, I did sort of, even at the time, I said it was like we were living with an alarm, you know, like a fire alarm going off. And, you know, say a fire alarm is always going off. Eventually you get used to it, you know, but it's there and it's causing tension. And when he left, it was just like somebody switched that off and you were like, oh my God.
Wow.
Right. This sort of source of tension and worry and anxiety that was constantly here that we got used to is now gone. And like, oh, just this sort of like relief, you know?
Wow, yeah. I know what that's like. Yeah. Like we'd feel that when he went to work.
Yeah.
But, well, then did your mom remarry after that?
No, she never remarried.
Okay. And how old were you when that happened?
This happened in my early teens.
Oh, good. So your high school was fine.
It was, you know, it was into high school too.
A little bit. Okay.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And you don't talk to him anymore. Well, he's dead. So, no. But I did, I mean, after they separated, he got sober and he got remarried. And he's, you know, and like I say, he was my brother and sister's dad.
Right.
So, yeah, I would see him. And it was, and even like, you know, our family too was, you know, and like you say,
Korean.
being good with exes. Very shortly after he and my mom split, my mom would have him over for like Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Oh, right.
You know, because it's like, you know, she could do that. She could say, well, for the kids and also for him, she also like, she didn't hate him, you know, and she felt like she didn't want to be alone on holidays. So yeah, I was like, used to that.
I got in a fight with a bunch of comics at the Comedy Store once a couple years ago when I broke up with Kalila, because they're like, well, how can you have a relationship with your ex? That's weird.
Yeah.
And I go, what are you talking about? Because if your relationship's based solely on sex, or that kind of thing,
right?
You know what I mean? Then I guess it'd be weird afterwards. But
right.
That's like my, you know, I mean, don't you share emotions and connection and and, you know, intimacy and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
And you become friends with them. And I just don't understand how people just can completely cut it off. But I guess that's how some people are.
Somewhere in the middle, I think, you're friends with someone, and then there becomes this sexual romantic component. And I think for a lot of people, when that goes away, it's too hurtful to have that be gone.
Mm.
Whereas if it's, if you can sort of integrate all the different parts of you and say like, okay, yeah, but the sexual romantic part, that's gone. I think, yeah, you can, get along with somebody, but it takes two people who are willing.
Two people to tango.
Yeah. It takes two people who are willing to overlook that who aren't like crushed by the fact that your sexual relationship is over,
Mm-mm.
I mean, a lot of people, I think, are just like too hurt by the notion that somebody doesn't want to fuck them anymore. She doesn't want to fuck me anymore. I can't be around her. And also she's like, she's seen me naked, I have had sex with her, and she's decided,
Maybe that's it.
She sampled my wares and is no longer interested, so goodbye.
But in my situation, I've always been the one that was like kind of not wanting to do it, maybe.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you usually end it?
What I do is I'll force them to break up with me through time.
Right. So do you withdraw?
Because those are hurtful things.
Right.
You have to be very subtle about it.
Right.
So you do little things to weird them out.
Uh-huh.
Right. So here's one that I do. Like when I orgasm, I don't make a noise. I lock eyes with them and don't make a noise. It's very creepy.
Do that on purpose?
Yes.
So if you want to break up with someone, I'll look at him and go. Oh, he's
right.
Oh,
and if you do that like
folks,
10.
You can't see it, but that was gross.
Yeah, yeah. If you do that 10 times in a row. It just gets into their...
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Or you forget their name for a split second.
Oh, that's bad.
But you do a snap.
Yeah, yeah.
So you go, hey, Sarah. Right? So it's kind of subtle. They're like, I don't know what that is. Right? But if you do 20 of those, they'll break up with you.
Then you're like, yeah, yeah.
They don't know why.
Right.
But you do the orgasm, no noise.
Yeah, yeah.
You forget their name like 10 times.
Yeah.
Or you give them the same gift 2 years in a row.
Wow.
Like different things like that, like an oven
mitt.
Have
you ever thought about having one conversation?
No, about the topic. No.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a crow?
Listen, I don't want to waste a year slowly, I want to break up.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so hard to do. I just even doing that now.
Yeah, yeah.
Was difficult. That hypothetical breakup was so hard.
Right, right.
I don't like confrontation.
Yeah.
And I think that's...
No, I get that,
Like growing up with my dad, my brother and I were always like avoiding. So
right.
We would hide.
That's what I was going to ask.
Right.
What did you, were you just quiet or did you try to adopt... Like, did you try and adjust your behavior in a way that, like, so that you'd get on your dad's good side?
There was no way because...
Or try and affect his mood,
Because he didn't speak English.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Barely.
And you didn't speak Korean very well?
I understood Korean.
Right.
But, yeah, there was, like, here's what's sad. Like, I've never had a talk with my dad about anything.
Yeah.
About life.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
That's the conversation.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's
he doesn't
rough.
Know, right? So it's like I learned everything about life through 12 steps. So when I was 17, I went to my third rehab. And then I got sober then.
Yeah.
And so I had a sponsor, and I was a junior in high school, and I went to men's meetings, and I met all these like older men with a lot of time,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean, sobriety. And they would, you know, and they were all like into Ram Dass or, you know,
yeah.
these type of things. So I learned how to deal with life through 12 steps wow. in high school, because I didn't learn it from home.
Through like borrowed fathers at 12-step meetings.
Yeah, I mean, my sponsor, Dan, would go, next week, you know, I know you have a week off at school, so we're going to all go to a monastery and learn to meditate.
Wow.
And, you know, in the late 80s, I did that.
Wow.
You know, and so I was like, so like, I was exposed to like spiritual elements then.
Yeah, yeah.
It was weird, but it was cool.
And were your folks not religious at all?
No, I mean, they, you know, I mean, my mom was a Jehovah's Witness for like 2 months.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
That's a good amount of time.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're going to do it, then just yeah. make it short.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then my uncle was a Mormon, so I was baptized Mormon.
Wow.
Yeah. And I never went after that, yeah. after I was baptized.
Right.
And then my dad was a complete atheist. So yeah, nothing, really not much, you know. And my dad, what happened was in my early 20s, I told my parents I was going to do stand-up and do comedy, and they were like, "Want nothing to do with it." And then,
I mean, were they just indifferent, or were they like, "You fucking idiot," you know?
They don't know what it is.
Yeah,
you know. I mean, they don't know who Tom Cruise is,
right,
or whatever.
And what is this laughter you speak of?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's essentially what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I think my dad goes, but you never make me laugh."
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not funny.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, yeah, you don't know comedy, Dad.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean?
And also, the audience won't be hitting me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they did. You know what I mean?
With really?
I mean, with their
you know the San Diego scene. Was this the La Jolla?
No, but when you're bombing, that's a hit. That's a spiritual hit.
Yeah, yeah. But you're asking for it.
Yeah. But then I was 29 or 30, I called my parents and I go, "Hey, next Thursday, I'm going to be on Tonight Show, Jay Leno." And they were like, "Oh, on TV?" I go, "Yeah." And they stood up. They stayed up to watch it.
Yeah.
And then it just changed after that.
Oh, wow.
Because they couldn't believe it.
Wow.
And then I got on Mad TV, and was on every Saturday night. So my parents would stay up Saturday nights to watch it.
Yeah.
And then they were on it.
And were they proud?
Yeah, they were in sketches.
Oh, well, oh wow.
My dad did a sketch with me and Ike Barinholtz.
Like a number of times, or?
My dad was on it maybe 4 or 5 times. Uh-huh. We get residual checks.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So they completely got into it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Later in life, and he changed immensely, obviously.
Did he stop drinking at some point?
No, but he was just very gentle. It was weird.
Yeah.
And I completely forgot about all that trauma until he died.
Yeah.
And when he died, it all came back. I was terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, that's where I was born. You know, 1971, yes. San Diego.
That's right.
Yeah. What's the second question?
Look, you're here for an hour. Just calm down. We're not no. Take the foot off the gas.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, you got somewhere to be?
Mm-mm.
Nah.
I love being here. This is fun.
Oh, good. Yeah, no,
I enjoy
I was
you.
Happy. Yeah, I enjoy you. I do too.
Yeah,
I had a great time on Tiger Farts or whatever that was.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Well, and I do want to talk about, because you know, well, no, but
what? What?
No, just your addiction issues, because they're hilarious. No, because because it is such a formative thing, and I mean, and you were. I mean, according to this,
what are you looking at?
You tried marijuana and methamphetamine around 12.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know San Diego was.
Oh yeah.
So they had such mean streets down there.
It was North County, San Diego.
Okay.
And it's more inland,
uh-huh.
you know. And the town I grew up in, Poway, was, you know, there was, you know, pockets of affluent people,
uh-huh.
but there was also pockets of, you know. Not the ghetto, but like
right.
poorer, you know,
right,
areas.
Right.
And my dad had a refrigerator in the garage. We had one in the kitchen, obviously, but there was one in the garage filled with his alcohol.
Uh-huh.
And my mom would stock it like it was a liquor store.
Wow.
And so it was just infinite amount of liquor I could just drink. So, you know, it started
and
with that.
And then nobody kept track because there was so much. No. So you could steal all you want. Yeah.
And also, you know, I'm 11, 10. You know, I mean, two beers will get me pretty drunk, you know what I mean?
And are you doing this by yourself or are you like showing your friends like, come on over, let's steal some booze?
I've always been a solo guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I would do meth solo.
Wow.
I would, all that. I love it. I love being by myself.
Yeah.
And then I discovered meth at 12 and marijuana.
How do you find meth?
There was a kid across the street that like was skateboarding. And then he kind of flipped his board over, sat on the curb, and just started chopping meth on the other side of his board. And I walked across the street and I go, hi, I'm Bobby. He's like, what's up? I go, I want some. I didn't even care what it was.
Right.
And he goes, I go, why, what is it? And he was telling me, it's crystal meth. You know, you won't sleep for days. I go, I want it.
Cool.
I did a bump. I didn't sleep for
so
like a couple
snorting
days.
It, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then... that was it. I mean, it was the greatest thing ever.
Wow.
Yeah. And then,
but I mean, do you know that kid? I mean, how do you get more at age 12?
You start asking around.
And how do you get some at age 57? Asking for a friend.
No. Well, here's the thing. Okay. So I'm going to tell you how I got the money.
Okay.
It's very interesting.
All right.
So my parents had a safe.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So my dad owned and my uncles owned like 75 stores called Fashion Gal at the time. They're like clothing stores.
Wow.
Right?
In addition to the wig shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And then, so every
Fashion
Friday.
Fashion Gal.
I know. So my dad owned 5 stores in San Diego.
Wow.
Himself.
Yeah, yeah.
So on Fridays, he would, I don't know why he did this, but on Fridays, he would like go to all 5 stores and grab the money of the week in these brown paper bags. Bring him home, put it in a safe, right?
It's like Goodfellas.
I know.
It's
and then
awesome.
On Mondays, he would take all of it and bring it to the bank.
Right.
Right? So, and he always forgot his lock, so he always kept it ajar. He never, like, locked the safe.
Oh, he kept the combination in a jar?
No, he didn't know the combination. Like, one time, he couldn't remember the combination. It was a whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So they just, you know what I mean, put, like, a thing in it so that it would, like, a cardboard thing, so it wouldn't shut all the way.
Like so effectively, it was like putting in a kitchen cabinet.
Yeah. You could have just put it like on the ground.
Right,
you know
right,
I mean?
Right.
Right, and I would, and you know, when you're like, I would steal like a couple $100.
Yeah.
But there was thousands.
Right, of course.
In
if
there,
it's
right.
a take from 5 Fashion Gals.
Right, and so there's also 5 different bags, so you would take maybe 40 from
right.
here. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
just, you
yeah.
know. And then.
You
so
were a clever little thief, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, oh, and yeah. And I stole. Probably over my lifetime in that $20,000.
Wow.
I mean, over the years.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had no idea.
Yeah.
It was the best. And I would just get weed and like rocks of meth and acid and all that stuff.
Wow.
It was so fun.
Was there ever an element of guilt?
No.
That you were taking and just, you know.
I felt so, to see my mom get beat up and stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's like, she has a missing tooth.
Wow.
Because my dad knocked it out and stuff. And so when you're witnessing all that, you know, my hatred, it's so funny. My brother and I experience the same thing, but he lashes out into the world.
Yeah.
But I lash within.
Oh.
Hate myself.
Oh, boy.
Not now.
Yeah, yeah.
I love myself now.
Oh, you're so proud of myself. Well, you ought to.
I'm so proud of myself.
Everyone does.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
except your exes.
Yeah.
It's more of a pity thing with them.
Yeah. But I, so I just, you know, didn't feel bad.
Yeah.
You know, I just, I was always, because, you know, we had a Blockbuster video too by my house.
Yeah.
So I was always just like, you know, I watched Taxi Driver as a young kid
mm-hmm.
and like Blackboard Jungle. I mean, just like all these, you know, Rebel Without a Cause. I just felt like I was going to die young in a glory. You know, I had no dreams of going to college or having a family or anything
yeah.
like that. And luckily, when I was 17, I got sobriety, you know, and my life changed.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Was that your first time in rehab?
No, it was my third time.
Oh, wow.
But I went to this place called the McDonald's Center. And it's funny because, you know, when I was at the McDonald's Center at 17, so this has got to be 1988,
mm-hmm.
I walked out into the lobby and there was this old Korean man. Not old. There was a Korean man with white hair down to his, like, waist.
Wow.
He had tattoos on his, you know, right? And his name is Dan.
Yeah.
And he walks up to me. He was like, he looked like a Mortal Kombat fucking character. You know what I mean?
No, that's it. Sounds like a kung fu movie.
Yeah. He just came up to me and goes, "I'm Dan. I'm your sponsor." Like, I didn't even know him. And I was like, you know, Kareem.
You were assigned to him by the McDonald's people? Or he just decided?
No, because I would complain about how there are no Koreans in AA. So how can we get...
Right.
Koreans can't be, be alcoholics. It's ridiculous. So they introduced me to this guy, Dan, right? Who had, like, at the time,
right,
15 years of sobriety or whatever. Right. And he also spoke Korean.
Yeah.
And English. And he was able to communicate with my parents.
Yeah.
Which was like a godsend. Because he would go, like, in Korean, he would say, he's going to go to this AA meeting every Saturday morning, so he has to pick up the cake at this baker, so you got to give him money, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And my parents were all on board. So every Saturday morning, I would, like, go to a baker, bring cake to this men's meeting in Mount Soledad, men's in La Jolla, and set up and cut the cake and stuff, you know? And next week, I'm going to San Diego to give Dan his, like, 40-something, 50th, so like, long, like his cake.
Oh, for like 50 years.
Yeah, he's still in my life.
Sobriety.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I forget what the number is, but yeah, Dan is, you know, he came to my show a month ago in San Diego. I did a show there. I love him. So he's still in my life. But anyway, what?
That he? No, I'm just saying.
No, I mean, what?
I'm just Well, but then I was gonna gonna say, like, do you think of him as the father figure in your life? Yeah,
I do, and I He, like I said, you know, I mean, he exposed to me all these spiritual elements and stuff back then. And it's like, there's, what was so interesting, because I went to rehab in La Jolla.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I graduated from high school, it just made sense to move there.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived a block away from the La Jolla Comedy Store.
Right.
In which, where I started stand-up.
I see.
And so what happened was I spoke at an AA meeting when I was 22 years old. And it was like a speaker meeting. So there's hundreds of people there.
Mm-hmm.
And I crushed. Like, I fucking, I would kill it when I shared.
Yeah.
And then this guy came up to me and just basically went, "You got to do stand up."
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just, you know, at 23, without sobriety, without me being in La Jolla, I always believe that everything kind of happens.
Yeah.
I just follow this path and everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
And so I just showed up at the La Jolla Comedy Store. I worked next door actually at a coffee shop, and I already kind of knew the manager, and I got a job there as a bar back, and I started doing open mics.
Wow.
And then 9 months later, I opened for Pauly Shore in Vegas.
Uh-huh.
And then Mitzi.
Because he worked with you in La Jolla?
No, he would headline on the weekends, and one day he goes, "I want to see you go up." And I went up before him, and he had me open for him, and then Mitzi was there.
Uh-huh.
And after like a 9 months.
Mitzi Shore, owned the, yeah.
And after 9 months of doing stand-up, she made me a regular.
Wow.
It was like incredible.
That's great.
And then I moved to LA, and then here I am.
Well, you must have been good.
If you look at my Instagram.
Yeah.
I have a post that I just discovered maybe 3 weeks ago about it. So Paulie's brother, Scott. When I was just starting, I was working at a restaurant too, and he goes, "I want to make a documentary comic." So he filmed me at my work and also filmed me my sets. So if you look at my Instagram.
Back before when you were starting out.
Yeah, like I was 8 months into comedy.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Probably before the Vegas thing.
Yeah.
And you could see a little clip of me doing a little stand up, and then also me at my coffee shop job making coffee and stuff.
Wow.
And me just talking about, like, you know, I have to work, you know, but it's just really just, I'm proud of myself, you know. I honestly, and don't say no. I'm going to just say something, okay? I don't know if I have that much talent. You know, I mean, here's what I do have.
Do you want me to say no?
Yeah. No, but.
Because I'll just sit here quietly if you want me to.
No. No, what I'm saying is that the one thing I do have is that I'm brave enough to go up on stage.
Yeah.
And I didn't quit.
Yeah.
Right? And I just would not, I would, you know, this town is all about no.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't take no for an answer. I just kind of like absorb it. I just move forward until I get the yes. I mean, I just have that ability. I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
You know, you know, I mean, I guess, I mean, I know how to memorize lines. I know how to write a joke and stuff like that. But it's like, I don't know how difficult that is. I don't know.
I totally relate. Because it's like, what we do is kind of nebulous. It's not
That's
like,
what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, we didn't go to fucking Juilliard.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
any,
yeah, yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it is kind of, you know, I mean, my acting is just, I got jobs. And then I, you know, like,
I know.
Oh, okay, you know, sort of. I mean,
have you ever done a scene and you see Video Village, you know, right?
Yeah.
And you do the scene and they're kind of just discussing. They're like, I guess, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they look and they go, well, okay, we're just going to move on.
Yeah, yeah.
And you go, is that good? I don't know.
My entire acting career, you know, you do a number of takes and then they're like, and then they'll, you know, often say like, is there anything you want to try? Like, you know, you'll do their direction, yeah, yeah, how they want to do it. And they'll be, anything you want to try? And I'm always like, no.
I know. Like, yeah, yeah,
if
yeah.
If you think it's good, then I'm going to take your word for it.
I know. Do it the same way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'm going to get out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so uncomfortable. It's kind of so.
No matter what the job, one thing I've always been good at is leaving work.
Oh, me too.
As fast as possible.
Yeah, there's two different types of people. There are some guys that want to stick around. I don't know why.
I don't know
either.
They
want to talk to the, you know what I mean, and just be around it.
Right.
No, I'm always like, let's get out. It's on fire.
That's
what it feels like. You know?
I was raised by lazy people who taught me that work is to be avoided.
Yeah.
You know, get out of there.
Yeah.
You know, did the bell ring? Leave.
Yeah.
You know.
I always feel like, not am I acting? But I have to act like an actor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when I'm, because I'm so nervous.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, you know, but I have to, you know, exude some sort of confidence.
Yeah.
I remember one time I'm on, sometimes I do Sex in the City.
Yeah.
Right? And I was.
I've seen you on it. I have. Because my wife watches
it.
I don't watch it because I'm totally hetero.
Yeah, me too.
I'm straight.
Hetero. I'm hetero too.
Yeah, me too. I don't even know what a throw pillow is.
Ottoman.
Yeah. I can't pick out drapes. I'm straight.
Yeah, me too. But one time I was in my dressing room, like bent over, trying to memorize these lines.
Yeah.
Right? And then Sarah Jessica Parker just walks into my room. She goes, okay, let's do it now. And I just remember, like, this is what I wanted to say. I don't.
I don't know.
I don't know it.
Yeah.
I'm so nervous. Yeah. But instead, I remember going, all right, act like you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to run it?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm acting like an actor.
Right.
If I'm really myself there.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not going to be able to function. I'm not going to be able to do it.
I did this really dopey show that started in Chicago.
What's it called?
Real Life Brady Bunch.
Love it.
It was reenactments of Brady Bunch episodes.
I never saw it.
It got, well, it's, no. It was, if you've seen the Brady Bunch, and you just think of adults doing it in bad wigs. And, but I did that. It got very popular. It went to New York, and the casting director saw it. And I played Mike Brady. It was like the most boring character in the whole show.
Is that the oldest?
It's the dad.
Oh.
It's Robert Reed.
Wow.
And so this, somebody said, hey, there's somebody wants to talk to you after the show. And I went out, and it's this casting agent or casting assistant. And she says, you're really good. You should talk to my friend, Molly. She's an agent. And so, okay. She gives me her number. I call her up. I go sit across from her for 45 minutes to an hour, just kind of chatting.
What agency?
Making her laugh. I don't remember, honestly. And she's like this kind of old cigarette-y lady, you know. And she was.
I had one of those.
But she was, yeah, but she was just like. You know what? I want to rep you, and I'm going to call. And she called.
Wow.
She was like, I'm going to call casting at, you know, like the network, New York network. And she's like, she called somebody, and it's like, I'm going to call, you know, Dorothy at ABC. And she's like,
yeah, yeah.
And then she's talking to me. She goes, I got this kid sitting here. He is amazing. You got to see him. No, he's not just a funny guy. He can do it all.
And I was like, can I?
But I realized right there that, like, oh, she's treating me as legit. It would be rude to deny her, you know, like she's saying this. And so I got to go out there and follow up. You know?
You can't go.
Yeah.
Hang up.
Wait.
I got nothing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? You can't do that.
You don't really know me.
I know. You
this
have to
is
go
bullshit.
With it. I know, but you, in that moment, you're like, you're literally going, probably. I don't know if I can do it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the same way. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And especially coming from Chicago, the notion of New York was incredibly, like, intimidating to me. Like, yeah, yeah. You know, Chicago was like, oh, Chicago. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm funny in Chicago, but in New York, you got to be, I don't know, classy or something. And then I quickly learned, especially like then doing the Conan show. And when we like start, I realized, oh, no, no, there's New York, especially when you're like, we need to see have people in here to do a sketch. It's a comedy sketch. And then you get like 15 people and you're like, Jesus Christ, not one of them is funny, you know? You know what I mean? It wasn't until a bunch of Chicago people moved to New York that we got all these like day players for the Conan show that really helped us make all these bits, you know? Yeah.
The worst is, I had this Comedy Central pilot and I called in all my friends.
Yeah.
But then because it's my show, I have to watch their audition in the room.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
It's so weird.
It's the worst situation to be in, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you want to like, you know what I mean, go, John, just calm down.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? This is not John.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
But they come in like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And also, too, I've been in that situation, too, where people will want, they'll like kind of like, can you get me a part on your show? And then you have to act like, I don't have any control over that. And it's kind of like, your name's in the title. You know?
I think you have a little bit of influence, but
I'm like, I don't. Oh, that's beyond me.
Yeah. But why won't you do it though? Because you know, in your mind, the person that's asking will never get it,
or is not right for what for like something.
Well, okay,
let's say,
I'm Philip.
Okay.
Right.
All right, Philip. Hi, Philip.
Contango.
Hi. I'm Philip Contango. How's life in Nairobi?
I'm pretty good.
Good. Oh, good.
Hey, Andy. You know, I've been acting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, man. What up, dude? Give me a...
Well, now, Philip, what I'll tell you is...
Hold on, let me finish what I'm going to say.
All right. Sorry, Philip. Jesus Christ. Well, listen, I'm used to talking and not listening, okay? My name's in the title. All right, Philip, go ahead.
All right. So, can I get a couple lines as the waiter? Because I was just on the breakdown.
Well, sure. You know what? You're going to have to read, first of all, because the decision is not just mine. You know,
but you're a producer.
I am a producer, but I'm not the producer, and I don't run the show, which was always true. There was someone else that ran the show.
Yeah, but I know, but it's me, Philip, and I'll say that.
I know.
Andy Richter and the executive producer.
I know, but you have
two lines.
Philip, I got relatives that want to get in the show.
Okay.
You're just fucking Philip Contango. Have a little self-awareness, for fuck's sake.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a crow?
Now, I'm reading now.
Okay.
All right. Would you be in the room if Philip read or no?
Probably not. Probably not for a one-off part.
All right.
For a regular or for like a big featured part, I think that I would. But even then, I don't think like when there was somebody that was, you know, like a big featured player in an entire episode, I don't think I read with those people.
Oh, you didn't?
Yeah. Those people.
The two lines.
No, but I think that somebody else would make the decision, and I would just find out. This woman is playing the woman you're dating,
right.
Or this woman, you know, this man is playing, you know, your angry neighbor, you know?
Yeah. But I have called, like, you know, and the casting director go, hey, my buddy is coming in to read a couple of lines. Just tell me what it's like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, like, on Andy Richter Controls the Universe, which was the first show that I had, I pushed to get my friend Tommy, who's one of the Tommy Blatcha, who's been a guest on this show and who's one of the funniest fucking people in the world. And this is, you know, I came from the Conan show. This is my first LA thing. I very much am being treated like a clever boy, you know, like not like a grown-up who's been on TV for a few thousand hours or whatever, but like a smart boy that, like, you know, oh, sometimes he can make you laugh with words that nerds haven't written for him. So I got my friend Tommy on, and I mean, I was a producer on the show that had my title in it. I wasn't a co-EP. I wasn't a, you know, associate producer. I was just a producer. I was like a, you know, a corporal, in the war that was named after me, you know? And so it was definitely, there was a lot of, you know, like you, in fact, at, there was, this was such a weird, weird one. In it, there was a session with the guy that ran the show and the director that was, you know, sort of the director for most of the episodes and directed the pilot. And there was a casting session with a, one of the series regulars, I think, is what it was. But it was definitely, it was a casting session that it was the three of us and then this, I think it was a woman. And they were trying to explain, give her a note and explain it. And I might have said, and I just said something like, you know, it's kind of like X, you know, I kind of just to clarify the note, I thought I'll be helpful and I'll just say, it's like this. I didn't get it, you know, it was just like one offhanded comment. The next morning when we're in the writer's room, I was called into a room aside and told, you cannot speak to the actors. You cannot give notes to the actors.
What?
Do not give notes to the actors. And I was like,
wait.
Okay.
The executive producer probably said
that? Yeah, yeah. And the director. They both together were like,
you know what I'd say? Fuck you.
I know, but I was just like, no, oh, okay.
You could say fuck you.
I know.
You're the star of the show.
But I would now. Now I would be like, okay.
Now what year was this?
This was 2000.
Oh, yeah.
2001.
So you couldn't then.
Oh, okay.
You couldn't then.
Yeah.
You can do it now.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you had to absorb it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I remember a bunch of stuff, times where I went, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But now?
Yeah.
Fucked it now.
Well, I did. There were times, as time went on, there were times when I would say no. You know, now the being able to say no and learning how to say no is, oh, it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I love it when I get to say no, you know.
But it's also, sitcoms used to have, I have to say, had all this weight to it.
Yeah.
Right? But now you know, oh, I could also just do an internet show and make as much money.
Right, right.
Right? It doesn't have that kind of power.
Yeah.
Back then, I would, audition six times, then you would test.
Right.
You know, the signed paperwork.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You're going to show up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then you're like, testing. Everyone's like, Tom Hardy's there. What? I'm against Tom Hardy?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, what me? Yeah, yeah. And you're fucked, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, one time I was against Brandon Routh of Superman.
Really?
Yeah. It was him and I for a part. I go, who wrote this?
Did he get it?
Yeah, he got it.
Oh, wow.
He's like, I'm going to get it. You think I'm Superman? What if it was for Superman?
but would have been like,
that would have been
amazing. We think we might throw a curveball and cast Bobby as Superman.
Oh, that would have been with The Little Mermaid. They changed it a bit.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but back then, no. There's no I'll Get Superman.
Right, right. I just watched that. I just watched that Quiet on Set, the four-part miniseries on Max Plus. There's your plug. About the Nickelodeon children's shows.
Oh, I heard that was good.
It's pretty amazing. And it is like I'm watching it. I'm watching it with my wife, and there's like something about how in the first season of all that, they hired two female writers. Oh, no, it wasn't even all that. It was the Amanda Bynes show.
Mm.
So it was the show about the girl, and they hired two female writers, made them split a salary, which the writers then found out later was totally against the rules. And, you know, there was lots of like, is it okay if I call you the girls kind of stuff? And I was just, and there was something about like that, you know, like the outrageous things they were asked. And I was like, they should have just fucking sued him, which one of them did end up doing.
Yeah.
And my wife was like, yeah, but back then that would ruin your career. And then later in the thing, it's like, I sued him and it ruined my career. No one would work with me because I sued this guy that like was incredibly successful and made a bunch of money for these people and who, you know, multiple investigations of, and not like that he was, you know, sexually abusing me, but just that he made a terrible toxic workplace for teen girls, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking creepy.
I mean, Bill Cosby, I feel like, he was making network people and so many people have so much money.
Yeah.
He has so much power that people just shut their mouths.
They must have known.
They must have known. You just shut your mouth. And then you know that if you call them out back then in that environment, you're fucked.
Yeah.
You're going to be buried with legal shit. It's going to be terrible.
It's hard looking back on things like that because it was the same. I've had instances of like, men that were Me Too'd that I wasn't like specifically aware, but I did kind of hear like, oh yeah, that guy's bad with women. Like people, like women say, don't be in an elevator alone with that guy.
Yeah.
And it was right. You just kind of were like, oh, okay. Yeah. That guy, women don't get in an elevator alone with him.
And then
like, well, back to work, you know, looking on it, it's like, why didn't I say no? It's like, because that wasn't the way it was.
Also, but you hear rumors too. You don't know if they're real or not. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, that remember that old rumor that the gerbil in Richard Gere's butt?
Yes.
Like, where did that come from?
It's ridiculous.
I'm sure it never happened.
And those are the kind of rumors, too, that are like, you know, or like Rod Stewart needing his stomach pumped and then finding gallons of semen in it.
It's insane.
You know, even, you know, you get to like age 11 and you're like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. And like a gerbil in your ass?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you get it in there?
I know.
And B,
was it a Show Business Journal gerbil?
Yeah.
He's plenty. Like going, well, look at my face.
There's plenty of things to shove up your ass that are easier and probably much more pleasurable.
Anyway, but I don't even know how that gets around. There was a pre-internet.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
People just say it.
I remember I worked on a movie with him in Dallas. And his wife, like it was a day that his wife and his kid were there, a kid or kids, I can't remember, were on set. And he was such a lovely guy. Still, I assume is, you know, but like just great. And then seeing them as a happy family together. And on my way home from set, I stopped at the grocery store in Dallas. And there's like a tabloid that's like, that it references the gerbil thing. And I'm just like, Jesus Christ, what a fucking life, you know?
And his kids look at that.
Yes.
People look at that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you have to explain to them.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, and I really don't have a gerbil.
You know I love gerbils.
Yeah. I would never.
Wow, that's crazy. So let's go to the middle now. What's the second question?
Who's running this thing? Me.
No, I want to follow the rules.
Okay, I know, but I mean, I'm still talking.
No, you didn't. You had a little dip there.
Well, tell me about, I know, but we're still like where you come from.
Oh yeah, we are.
Because I want to talk about the change in your life. Well, first of all, before you started doing stand-up, did you have any idea of what the rest of your life, did you have any plans for the future? Because you were working at a coffee shop. Well, so you're living in La Jolla because of recovery.
Here we go.
Okay.
I was deep in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was now, let's see, I started stand-up when I was 23. So when I was maybe 20, I met a guy named Scott Collins.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows who he is. Nice guy, though. At an A meeting. And Scott goes, you know, I want to do, you know, I have a loft. With a little space there to do an acting studio.
Oh.
And he goes, would you like to? And I go, well, I'm more interested in comedy maybe, but not. He's like, well.
Oh, so there was an interest there.
There was still an interest, yeah. And he goes, I know a guy named Gary Austin. Do you know Gary Austin?
Mm-mm.
So Gary Austin started the Groundlings.
Sounds like a porn star.
No, he started the Groundlings.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he goes, Gary travels to city to city and teaches improv. So Gary came to San Diego to this actor studio that my friend had.
Yeah.
And I took a year worth of classes twice a month.
Oh, wow.
So that's where I started kind of
So there had been a little bit.
A little bit of interest, you know what I mean? It was, because I did it in high school too, improv, in acting class or whatever. So I was in plays too. I was in The Sound of Music.
Oh, nice. Who were you in The Sound of Music?
Kurt.
One of the kids. And that's also one of the reasons why I knew I liked laughs, because remember when Fräulein Maria calls the kids down for the first time?
Yeah, yeah.
And they come down the balcony or whatever, right?
Right, right.
I remember coming down. It was a packed, you know, high school.
Yeah.
And as soon as people saw me, the whole theater went berserk.
Because one of the Von Trapps is Korean. Yeah, yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember, you know, I go, I'm Kurt. I'm whatever the line
yeah,
is, right?
Yeah, yeah,
and the players went crazy laughing, right?
Yeah.
And then I remember going to the director, you know, it's high school, and I go, is there any way you can change the lines? He's like, what do you mean? I go, well, just, you know, I'm Kurt. I was adopted. Or,
right,
you know,
sure,
or
yeah,
I play
yeah,
out
yeah.
in the sun too much. Right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I have a skin disorder. Yeah, I don't yeah. know, whatever it might right, be, right. right? He's like, no, we want to change
I was IVF.
Yeah. Because then I wouldn't get the laugh, but then I liked it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah, it's yeah. like, so I dabbled in it. So, you know, Gary really kind of taught me about commitment
yeah.
and on adding information.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, you know.
So you had the foundation, but it's like, you know, you're taking improv classes, but you don't know if it's, I mean, I was the same thing. I started taking improv classes and it was like, well, you know, I was taking improv classes with kids that like, and I took them cause they were local, but with like kids that like moved there from Phoenix cause they wanted to be on SNL. Oh, and I was like, yeesh. I'm like, yeah. I don't know.
Oh, Second City.
Yeah.
Chicago. Yeah.
Improv Olympic.
Oh, yeah.
And I just was like, wow, I just kind of am here for fun. Well,
that's
you know?
Crazy.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't so much focused on like one goal, like I'm going to get on SNL or I'm going to headline Madison Square Garden or whatever. Did you have one of those?
I think when you were just talking about all this,
yeah,
I think they're little dopamine hits. For instance, the first time you do a show where there's an audience,
yeah,
because sometimes when you do shows early on, there's no one there,
yeah,
two or three people, whatever,
yeah,
but you're like, there's 100 people here,
mm-hmm.
and then you do well. That's it's like a drug,
yeah,
right. When you book your first commercial,
yeah,
oh yeah, you have lines,
yeah,
and I get to do with you know what I mean, Charles Barkley,
yeah.
Like, I mean, and you move up.
Yeah.
It's like little drug hits.
Yeah.
I think that's why I did it.
Yeah.
And there'll be a year where you get nothing.
Yes, of course.
Right?
Right, right.
But then when you'll, out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Someone will call you and you're like, really?
Yeah.
They want me in that?
Yeah.
You're right? And it's like, and you slowly move up. I think that's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
The little lottery, like mini lotteries.
Yeah.
I think that's what show business is.
And also, too, I think it's, for me, too, there was the aspect of, you can't do that. Like, you know, yeah. you can't do that. And it's like, well, look, I just did.
Yeah,
you know,
I played
to 100 people and I did really well.
Yeah.
And people backstage were saying, you did really well in front of those 100 people. And then I did book that thing and I did get this role.
Right.
And so it's like, I can. Because there's, like,
but sometimes you can't.
Like you said, sometimes you can't. But like you said,
I've done I can't before, too. Yeah.
But there's still a voice in you that kind of still believes, like, well, this.
But you learn when you can't.
Yeah.
There was one time where I did a movie where I go, I think I can. And it was a monologue. And I got so nervous.
Yeah.
And they said action, and nothing came out.
Wow.
And then the director was like, you okay? You need some time? And I literally looked at the person and go, there's nothing you can do. We could do this now or 30 minutes from now.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to be able to do it.
Wow.
He goes, what?
What was
no,
it?
He goes, what?
Wow.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I go, I'm just telling you, I don't know what's going on right now, but I'm petrified. I'm like stuck.
Was it a tough monologue? Like,
no,
was it?
I just got in my head.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And that was the one time where I couldn't.
And what did they
just
do?
Just even thinking about it.
No, I'm sure. That would make
me. Just thinking about it makes me fucking.
Ugh.
Oh, my God.
What did they do then?
We're moving on.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I remember, like, it was embarrassing going back the next day.
Yeah.
People are like, actors are looking like, look at this fucking, you know. He doesn't want to fucking do nothing.
Wow.
He should kill himself.
They were saying that? Jesus Christ.
In my mind, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, a couple of times in my life where I've had moments of like, oh, I froze.
Yeah.
Like one time I did a show, I did a stand-up show in, oh my gosh, even thinking about it, it causes me PTSD.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did a show with it was this thing called Doghouse Comedy Jam.
Yeah.
And it was up north, you know, I think San Jose area.
Yeah.
And it was like this, you know, hip hop radio station. They did this yearly show, but the show was packed. It was like Chappelle, Cat Williams.
Oh, wow.
I mean, just on and on, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Leslie Jones was before me.
Uh-huh.
It's 20,000 seats.
Yeah.
Like 15 to 20, right? And I'm literally, can I stand?
Yeah.
There's like a brick wall right here.
Bring the mic up with you, though.
Okay.
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 Yeah.
There's like a wall right here, and like, you know, and there's a hallway.
Yeah.
So there's a wall, hallway, and I see Leslie kind of from the distance on stage. And the fucking wall is shaking.
From she's laughter? Killing,
yeah. She's killing that bad.
Right.
Like, right? And already I'm like, I'm fucked. There's nothing. I got nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
I went to Jeff Wills from Live Nation. I turned to him. I begged him. I got on my hands and knees. I go, sir, please. Sir, let me not do this one. What the fuck are you talking about? Stand up.
Yeah.
You'll be fine. So then what happens, she gets off and like everyone's high-fiving her, right? And then the host is like, ladies and gentlemen, Bobby Lee. And there's smoke in this hallway. You know, they put smokes. And I'm
like smoke machine
yeah,
smoke.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's not her killing smoke.
Right, no, I know. Or cigarettes or cigarettes. Joints.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's just, it's WWE entrance smoke.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And I run out there and I come out and like, it's like a sea of people.
Yeah.
Right? And I know me.
Yeah.
And I know my situations. It didn't feel right.
Yeah.
And as soon as I open my mouth, I'm like, here we go. And I remember 2 minutes in, just everyone booing me.
Oh my God.
Right?
Oh my God.
And I'm standing there like my body is being vibrated with booze.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, in Platoon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Riddled with
bullets. Riddled with booze, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And I'm like, I'm done. And then I start to cry. They can't see me.
Right.
Because it's so far away. But I just I just remember like, oh, I'm crying in my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And I turn around. I don't even say goodbye. I just walk off stage.
Wow.
Right? And now I have to go through the smoke again. Right. So I'm like running into the wall. You know, right. Yeah.
And whoever is on next is like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I thought I had 10 more minutes.
They're scrambling. And I remember ending up in like a medical room, like the medical place. I don't know why. I think I just like, I'm having a heart attack. I don't know, something.
Wow.
But I remember like them like patting me down in this room. And my agent was there, Matt. He's still my agent.
Yeah.
And he's laughing.
Yeah.
Right. And I go, why are you laughing? He goes, dude, at one point, you weren't even speaking English. I go, what do you mean? You're going, you know what I mean? Like, just nonsense
language.
Like, you went into
this
thing we've never seen in our lifetime. Like, everyone's laughing, right? And then, but then my, because I had to do the show again the next day.
Yeah.
Right. But I switched the lineup a little bit.
Right,
so
right.
It favored me.
And you did okay.
I killed.
Nobody, yeah, okay, good.
The next time.
Good, good.
But still, here's the lesson.
Yeah.
Even though that was the most horrific thing, right? I remember laying in the hotel bed with the sheets, you know what I mean? Just laying, just looking at the ceiling.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. The thoughts.
Oh, yeah.
But then I'm always like, no, you got to do it tomorrow. You got to kill
yeah, him. Yeah, yeah.
You're a warrior.
Yeah.
And just, you know what I mean? Take your licks.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and I just, a month ago, I was with Segura and Burt in Vegas at the MGM. And they had me and Shane Gillis did guest spots on their show.
Yeah.
It was 15,000 seats and I just murdered. It was like the greatest, you know, so you have victories as well.
One thing that occurred to me that I didn't say to you is like, you know, because you did have, you know, I sit here and I talk to stand-ups and they're like, you know, I ate shit for 4 years before anybody noticed me.
Mm.
And you did have a fairly quick, from when you started getting on stage, you did have a fairly quick thing. And it's because you have a energy to you that is very likable. And you have a charisma and a magnet. Honestly.
All right, thank you.
No, you're very easy to like.
Oh, thank you so much.
There's just, and I mean, just you talking, just you being in a room, it's like you are likable.
That's so nice.
Yeah, yeah. No, you can tell too that like you're on the good side of life.
Yeah,
you represent positive things.
Listen, I
unless that hurts your image.
No, I don't want to be like my dad.
Yeah,
you know, I really do. I want to do. You know, I look at him and I go, I want to nip that in the butt.
Yeah,
and I want to just be a better guy than he was. You know, although you know, at the end of the day, he grew up during the Korean War, where he saw dead bodies and.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And crazy shit.
Yeah.
You know, and
probably didn't have enough to eat all the time.
No, he didn't. He was a street kid too. He had to survive.
Wow.
And he did all these things. My mom, same thing. So it's like, no, I mean, it's like generational trauma and stuff. So I've been afforded a lot of help. I have a therapist, psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. I go to AA meetings. I have people around me. I'm constantly, you know, just daily maintenance dealing with where I'm at. And I, at the end of the day, it's like, I know. Not to feel depressed, you have to get out of yourself and help other people.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to always be in service, no matter where I'm at. You know, I try to get comics sober. I have my own AA meeting for only comics.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I have, and I started that with another comic, and it's growing, and it's been, it's something that I've gotten a couple of, I mean, it's helped people get sober. And it's, and it only makes me feel like I'm a part of this world and like not a piece of shit.
And it's meaningful. It's really, really meaningful.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to do sometimes. Sometimes, you know, you're not like, you know, you're in self.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking about your career or whatever. And those are like the dark, that's where I'm the most miserable.
Yeah.
And I'll have weeks of that.
Yeah.
I was just like, you know, because I'm, you know, Andrew Santino, my podcast partner, he's killing it.
Yeah.
Like he's in he's legitimate in movies.
And
you know, I'm watching him, you know what I mean? You go, oh, he's a star.
Yeah.
He's flying. You know, and I'm on the ground with a broken wing.
I know.
You know what I mean? And you do it and it's not working, you know what I mean? But it's like, that's when you're in self. And then when I'm out, and get me, you know, I have a TV deal. You know what I mean? I have a couple of movies coming. I mean, I'm doing fine myself.
No, I'm in the same boat. I have so much self-pity at times for like how much I'm not working.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I talk to people and they're like, what do you know? I might give off a little hint of that to somebody that I know kind of well. And they're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like you're you. You have.
We have
you
know, great lives, dude.
Yeah.
We really do.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, that's what I wanted to ask you. Are you happy with your life? Like, do you like your life a lot now?
He's getting close, people.
Yeah.
He's leaning in.
So, this year has been the best year of my whole entire life.
Oh, wow.
By
I'm
far.
I'm so happy to hear that. I really am.
Oh, thank you.
Why would I not be? No.
Okay.
Okay. But yeah. I mean, and tell me why. I
don't know
shut
why.
Up.
I really don't know why.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm around so much support for me.
Yeah.
That it's almost, I just get emotional, you know, thinking about it. Like, it's just, I'm overwhelmed with love.
Yeah.
And not just in my 12-step life or my family, even in this business. Like, I've had my friends stick up for me and, you know, and just really be there for me.
Yeah.
And it's just the things I've done, you know. I've just done so many cool things in this year of, like, you know, I'm going to go overseas to do this weird movie with, you know, I mean, a couple of these older actors, you know what I mean? That like, I never thought I'd ever be in a thing with.
Yeah.
I'm super excited about it. You know what I mean? And then like, you know, I'm doing shows with Andrew and I are best friends.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have to pinch ourselves because we're like, you know, I went home, I did San Diego and it was like 5,000 seats in this auditorium. And all my high school friends are there.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And I'm just like, and they all came backstage and hung out.
Yeah.
It's like super fun, you know? So it's just like, everything about it has been great, you know what I mean? And, you know, also it's the first time I've ever been single.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like single,
like
single?
Like single, single.
Yeah.
I'm killing it.
You know what I've seen? I've seen headlines. So I've seen headlines about murdered pussies all over town.
But no, it's been so good, man. And I know the shoe could drop. But you know, can't think that way. That's another thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying not to do is like, oh, these guys are great now, but when, you know what I mean, is it going to get bad?
Yeah.
But it's not, it might not, you know, who, I just I live in the moment.
Right, right. Yeah. I think too, I mean, you're about 5 years younger than me. I also feel like there was a point at which, and especially because being depressed a good portion of my life, there was a point like in my late 40s that I just kind of got better. Like I just, I don't, it wasn't, there wasn't any sort of like flash of light or, you know, some great realization. I just, it was just like, oh, that cloud that was around me just kind of moved on. And I'm able to kind of like actually interface with my life and kind of, you know, like, oh yeah, no, it is good. And I am here. And, you know, and I do, you know, I've said before too, like, you get this, I mean, it is a kind of wisdom just because you've been alive long enough and you've, you know, you've touched the stove enough to know, like, that's hot. Don't touch that. And I just think, like, there's no, you can't have that knowledge young because if you were young and pretty and that wise, you would be too dangerous. You know? Like, you'd just be too fucking dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, wisdom has to be shared with only like the leathery old people because then, you know, it's like, let them know.
Yeah, it's funny. I've talked to other people in their 50s,
right?
And we're all in the kind of the same place.
Yeah.
And I think the number one thing is that I've learned maybe later in life, it's just things just pass.
Yeah.
And I don't have to freak out about, you know what I mean? Because issues come up 10 years from now, I'm not even going to remember what they are.
Right.
You know, like I have my ex-girlfriend's niece, you know, she went to high school in my house because I lived with my girlfriend and she lived with us. And she would talk about her problems, you know what I mean? And it's just like, it was funny when you listen to them, you go, yeah, in high school, I probably had a similar problem. I just don't remember what they are.
Yeah.
And they had no significance in my life now.
Yeah.
At all. Right. It's just, they're nothing. It's nothing.
Yeah.
Right. But it was. You would lose sleep and
at the
like,
time. Yeah, it's like, how am I ever going to get through this? Yeah,
carry, you know, or whatever. Yeah. And it's just like things just pass, man.
Yeah.
And my sponsor goes, like, I'll complain about something, and he'll go, like, if it's a Friday, he'll go, is it Friday's business? Like, what do you mean? He go, that has nothing to do with today.
Yeah,
it has nothing to do with the things that you're doing right now.
Yeah,
they're all hypothetical.
Yeah,
problems. Yeah. You know what I mean? Issues that aren't even real.
Yeah.
So, you know, you learn.
Yeah.
How long does this go?
You know what? You just, Jesus Christ, what a dick. No, but
let's
listen.
Let's go to the second question. The
no,
third
no.
One.
Yeah, I was going to tell you, you just answered the third question. What have you learned? You actually said, I have learned bad times pass. Yeah. Was this an Elvis pose?
Whatever, man.
Well, no, we're done.
I loved it.
You know, too. This was really an awesome conversation.
If I ever see you in the streets, don't ever talk. No, I'm kidding. If I ever see you, I love you so much.
Let's hug you too.
And let's be friends.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
You're my new, you know, here's another guy, Rainn Wilson.
Uh-huh.
You and Rainn are my new white guys.
Oh, really?
For life, yeah.
You need more white guys.
No. I'm very picky. I'm picky. Not this guy for sure.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, that's
Mexican.
Why. That's why I knew.
Yeah,
I hate Mexicans. Yeah. I love them. But anyway, thank you. So I want to plug some stuff.
Yes, do.
So I have a movie coming out with Johnny Knoxville and Theo Vaughn. It's called Sweet Dreams.
Yeah.
And it comes out, I don't remember, April something.
Wait, hold on. I got it.
And then...
April 16th.
Yeah, I'm in a movie with Kevin Hart. I mean, I have only a couple scenes. But with Kevin Hart, Jamie Lee Curtis, Cate Blanchett, and it's called Borderlands. It comes out. It's like a... action movie based on a video game comes out this summer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's on my Instagram, trailer.
That's cool.
And that's...
Have you been in a big effects kind of movie like that before?
No.
Wow.
Yeah, it was cool. I first of all, we did it 3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
In Hungary. Not only that, like, I've never been in a movie with people that people know. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, I've been in movies with friends, like... I did Drugstore June, but all my friends are in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're big, but I don't know. You know what I mean? But that was like the first movie where I was like, you know, like, Oh, real. These are the real ones.
Oh, you know what I mean? Yeah.
And I remember when I was about to fly to Budapest, because it was during COVID, so they go, you can't leave the hotel. So all the actors have to hang out with each other. Yeah, right? Yeah.
You
so,
and Kate Blanchett.
Yeah, no, so we
in
did.
A hot tub.
It was amazing. So wow. My agent was like, they're not going to hang out with you, probably. So just
be ready for
just
that.
Realize for a month of loneliness.
Yeah.
Right? So I show up at my hotel, and there's a letter on my bed. And it said, hey, we don't know each other, but we're here in Budapest together. So tomorrow at noon, meet me at this restaurant and let's have lunch. Dear Jamie Lee Curtis.
Wow.
So I woke up the next day and I showed up and she was there. It was amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and she hasn't called me back in 3 years.
You know, must have been some lunch.
You know, I know, but you know how you become friends with people on a movie?
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
And you're like, I'll see you. You know what I mean? Yeah. And you never see any, but no one calls
right.
To you.
Yeah, yeah.
But just in that time, just milk it.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, so I'm in that, and Tiger Belly Bad Friends are my podcast.
And you're going to be doing live dates of your podcast, Bad Friends.
No, this is a big one.
Andrew Santino.
In Hawaii,
oh.
I'm doing a Tiger Belly live.
Oh, nice.
Soon. Look at it. It's the best show you'll ever see. It's
like, when do you mean?
In April
soon?
Somewhere.
In April sometime.
Yeah, yeah. Look it up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it's going to be in Hawaii. It's the best show you'll ever see.
On which island?
You don't Oahu. Know?
Oh, on Oahu.
Oahu.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, there's more than one. It could have been cool. All right. They ran me on. Oh, thank you for being here. This was a joy. It really was. Goodbye, everyone. We'll see you next time on the Three Questions. Oh, Bobby's he's putting his car keys and his wallet. He's leaving.
So fun, man.
Fuck. Jesus, I thought we shared something. Anyway, Three Questions is done. Bye.
The Three Questions with Andy Richter is a Team Coco production. It is produced by Sean Doherty and engineered by Rich Garcia. Additional engineering support by Eduardo Perez and Joanna Samuel. Executive produced by Nick Liao, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, with assistance from Maddie Ogden. Research by Alyssa Grawl. Don't forget to rate and review and subscribe to The Three Questions with Andy Richter wherever you get your podcasts. And do you have a favorite question you always like to ask people? Let us know in the review section.
Can't you tell my love's growing? Can't you feel it ain't showing? Oh, you must be a-knowing. I've got a big, big love.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.